this is the reason why I brought you guys on, because you kind of touched on all the questions that I have within the scope. But I want to go back to, we have church fathers, church history. There are other people that are doing the work that are doing it well, but we also have Origen. Origen, he thumbs his nose at Caesar, you know, another here I stand, I can do no other type deal, a Polycarp of his time. But he's reading kind of whatever he wants into scripture. And he's saying, look, it's allegory. I can take that allegory and apply it to today. So let me just come up one off the top of my head that no one's ever done. I'm David. My sin is Goliath. And I just need the rocks of prayer, scripture. What else? Money, money is in there too. However many examples I need to get to six rocks, and just one of them will flay my sin. So you can send me Psalm $74.49 for Psalm 74:29 and send that to Cave of the Cross Apologetics.
That's right.
How is that not?
Or you can send it to us by going to buymeacoffee.com/flyover.
Listen, we'll get to yours at the end. You know, that's not what happens. You guys do need coffee at the time that you guys record. So, how is Origen's hermeneutics not as good? He was solid. He knew to stand against Caesar. We like that. We love those. You know, he was David. Caesar was Goliath. And he was like, no, get out of my face. I'm going to go back to preaching. And, things happen. So why isn't Origen's hermeneutics just as valid and good? I mean, God used him in church history, right?
Yeah, there's the hermeneutical question. One of that is, so what we're talking, kind of there's two types of hermeneutic that we, there were actually four. But we kind of more talk about just the two. There's also the tropological. I always forget the fourth. And then there's allegorical and literal. And when people hear those two options, we allegorical is to say, like, we know allegory, like, okay, like, even though Lewis denied it, Narnia was kind of an allegory. Like or we'll go with, Pilgrim's Progress was intentionally an allegory. The story itself doesn't matter in this sense, but what matters is that it represents something else. That's not how they read scripture.
Even but Josh, Jesus is a door. He's a literal door. If you want to take it literally, if you can't take that allegorically, then I don't know what to do with you.
And if the world isn't flat on four pillars, then I've lost everything.
Great. I'm glad you admitted it here.
And also the birds aren't real, but they didn't read it that way either. Like the allegory was kind of one of the tools in their chest. They still use literal readings. But we have to be clear what literal meant. It's now become one of those battles of you have, especially dispensationalists, which, again, if you're a dispensationalist, don't be, but there'll be this battle over whether or not literal readings, we're reading it the literal way. No, we're reading it the literal way. Well, literal in that sense meant literary. Like it meant the, in the sense of when you read
a book, the way you read a book.
Yeah. When you read a poem, you don't read that and think, no one reads Song of Solomon and thinks that woman's neck is like a tree, like that she's got like this long tree like neck and like fawns coming out of her. Anyway, we know that we're talking about in that sense, allegory is the literal reading. Like another way, like the book we're reading, Revelation, allegory is the literal way of reading Romans 13.
Revelation 13.
John doesn't picture an actual seven-headed beast coming out of, did I say Romans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Libertarian Freud.
It always comes back. Revelation 13. There's not a literal seven-headed beast coming out of the literal ocean. He's using imagery. And so I think that's something to keep in mind, is that, and that is something also that we talk about the Reformation. In many ways, the Reformation was the conquest of the literal reading, because especially the further away we get from the original context in which the writings were made, the more the allegories become more fanciful, the way the moralistic readings get more further untethered from the original reading, and the literal becomes like, we need to more and more get back to the literal reading. What kept even those people using the allegorical reading back then was that the literal reading wasn't as hard for them, because they weren't so, as far removed from the historical context. But even to them, we can say, like, there's something like, I think Jeff and I have talked about, you know, there's sort of the two flaws. There's the flaw of older is better, so older is always better, or the flaw of newer is always better. Out with the old, in with the new, what C.S. Lewis calls chronological snobbery, that if something's new, it must be better. And you have to reject both of those, because there's a sense in which we can look back to the first, to the church fathers, and we can say, we have learned from your mistakes, because we've seen how they play out. We've seen how the allegorical reading plays out over history. It does get to a point where you can make the Bible say whatever you want if you're untethered from the original reading. But also, like, there is a sense in which we also don't want to look back on them and say, you know, poo-poo on you. They had important things that they had to say, because they were closer to the historical context in which the text was written, and because we need to acknowledge that we stand on the backs of giants, even as we move beyond them. In some ways, we are moving beyond them because they catapulted us forward, you know, even in those situations. But I think the big thing is, like, literal, that word trips a lot of people up. That's why we've kind of gone away from that in favor of the phrase grammatico-historical. So grammar, you hear grammar, we're trying to read what is the main verb, what is the set, you know, subject, what is the object, the thing that you didn't pay attention to in English class, and we're trying to remember that and go back to that.
It's why lesson three in Mounce's learning Greek is learn English.
Yes.
Once you get the alphabet down, you go back and you go, oh, I have to do 12 years of English again.
Yeah. And that sort of thing is what you have to do. The grammatical historical. We're also looking at the historical context. Don't make the assumption that everything is written to your day and time. And that's kind of where we, that comes from. Yeah.